And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, when Anakin is forced to go away, they get Pong Krell, and the clones are like, what the fuck, because we're on Umbara! And this week, there will be, we're here! We're on Umbara! This is my favorite part of Clone Wars! It is Christmas in July! But, well, I guess when this episode comes out, it'll be August. But it's Christmas in August, but it's July for me, bitches! It's a four episodes. It's all Rex and all clones and all Rex clone goodness and my babies. I'm so excited because we're talking about the darkness of Umbara this week. Hi, Douglas!
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Listeners, what you didn't hear is when Chris called me for the Skype call, I was just like, hi!
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, are you okay? And I was like,
yeah,
a little
bit of energy for this show.
I'm just talking at, like, a high-pitched tone. I need to, like, pull it back so I'm not, like, scaring our poor listeners.
Yeah, take it down to 12, Hope.
Oh, I'm just so excited. I've talked about this for, what, four seasons, and we're here? We're here, guys. We're here. As I drink more coffee. Oh, my gosh, I'm just so excited. I'm just really excited. I'm happy right now.
I can't believe we're 81 episodes into this show.
I kind of had that last week when I was, like, labeling our outline. I was just like, Jenkins and Jedi, episode 80. And I was like, what?
80, wow. Yeah.
80. And this is episode 81. That's crazy. Oh, though, I realized something, Chris, and I meant to tell you this before we started recording, but it's too late now because I'm already talking. So you know how we were talking about, like, what possibly to do our commentaries over?
Uh-huh.
I realized something, because we talked about doing Rogue One in December, and then I was like, well, next year we will be starting Season 5, which is when Saw Gerrera comes in. So I wasn't sure, do you want to watch Rogue One, or do you want to watch Saw Gerrera and then do Rogue One later next year?
I'm
good with either.
I'd be really into doing Rogue One and Force Awakens.
Me too, but I just wasn't sure because I know you haven't seen Season 5 when Saul comes in.
It's so, okay.
Okay. Because I kind of wanted to do that too. I've been holding off watching Rogue One, and I was just like, well, if we do it in December, but part of me was like, wait, if I can talk Chris into doing it next year, I'll go ahead and watch Rogue One. So, all right, I'll wait till December. Like a good co-podcaster.
You'll go ahead and... You've watched Rogue One, though, right?
Yeah, but I've been wanting to rewatch it a second time. I haven't seen it a second time, but I was like, okay, if we're doing it in December, I'll just wait. So it's still kind of fresh. So it's like I'm reliving it. So because I've only seen it the one time, we still need to figure out our third and fourth week of our commentaries to do.
Well, I know we were talking about the Tartakovsky.
I would like that a lot.
And
what the fuck thing could be the droids or the Ewoks thing that I haven't seen.
Yeah, I was thinking the Ewok adventure. I think so. That was the first one, and I think it came out roughly around Christmas time, too.
Okay, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, you say, well, it's better than the holiday special, that's for sure.
I don't think I could ever get back that 3 hours of my life.
It's a kiddie movie, but it's not as kiddie as the holiday special, that's for sure. And it's got its moments, and it's got, narrated by Burl Ives.
I don't know who that is.
Yes, you do, because you've watched... I know you've watched the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas special.
Oh,
Burl Ives is a snowman in
Oh! okay.
Silver and gold.
Yeah. Didn't he reprise that role for Elf?
You know what? I might be wrong. It might not be Burl Ives. It might be Wilford Brimley. Because I think Wilford Brimley is in it.
Well, I equally don't know who that is either.
Wilford Brimley is the guy who does the diabetes ads now.
He's an older actor. Yeah. Totally know who diabetes is.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So now you know who Burl Ives and Wilford Brimley are. What they would probably want you to remember. You know, Wilford Brimley has an acting career behind him, and Burl Ives was a musician. Was a really, really great songwriter, singer-songwriter.
It's kind of like Daniel Radcliffe. He's going to be 70 and always be Harry Potter.
Yep.
Poor Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, he's doing okay.
Yeah, I mean,
to be in the farting corpse movie.
Oh, I think the better example is Mark Hamill, but Mark Hamill loves being Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, well, Mark, you know, I'm sure it was a process to get there, though. Mark Hamill did basically sort of kill his career with Star Wars of doing anything else, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, he loves it so much, and even Harrison Ford eventually came around, because I think it was this celebration, he was just like, I was wrong. Like, this is awesome. Like, I finally realized how cool this was. And he was just like, I embrace Star Wars. And people were like, yay.
Well, that's because he doesn't have to do another Star Wars movie ever again.
Yeah, unless they do, like, flashbacks or something. But I doubt they'll do flashbacks. Or maybe, like, a flash forward in the Han Solo movie, like... The entire Han Solo movie is a flashback, and the final scene is Harrison Ford or something.
I kind of hope not.
That would be terrible.
Yeah. I saw a great short by the Red Letter Media guys where they basically, and I thought it was a very smart thing to do because they're very popular, and you know the people from Lucasfilm are watching them. They basically sat down and shot ideas around for the worst things that they could do for the Han Solo movie. You know, the worst ways they could approach it. And they just went over them ruthlessly, and I was like, this is good, because they're sort of killing this stuff. They're sort of killing this stuff, and so if someone from Lucasfilm sees us and they're doing any of this, they're going to go, oh, no.
What were some of the things?
A lot of crossovers where that, you know, Han Solo, you know, has a, you know, run in with this person or that person. I'd have to watch it again, but it was about a half hour of really terrible stuff, terrible plot points, and, you know, traps that scriptwriters fall into over developing Han Solo, so everything he said and done in every movie since then is explained in this movie, you know. Yeah, I'd have to watch it again, but I highly recommend it if you find it. It's
okay.
Red Letter Media.
Well, you ready for Umbara?
I'm ready. Pretty sure you're ready.
Yeah. I'm so excited. Okay. All right, here we go.
This is going to be great. We're not even going to be able to tangent today because you're just going to be like laser-focused on your clones.
I am. I'm laser-focused. I almost told a story about Lupita Nyong'o, but I decided against it. Okay, I'm already talking now. So Lupita Nyong'o is the voice and actress behind Maz Kanata, and she released a really cute video on her Instagram where she was running around Comic-Con dressed as the Pink Ranger, so nobody knew it was her, and it was really adorable because she was just being a nerd and a dork, and like she was like dancing and like pointing at pictures of like Maz Kanata, just like, hey, look, it's Maz, and people started dancing with her, and then people in the comment section was like, oh my god, I took a photo with you, oh my god. Like, I love when stars do that. I think that's
well.
Really
she's one of those. She's got the thing where, you know, unless you know what the actress looks like, she looks nothing like Maz Kanata. She's a young woman, you know.
Yeah,
whereas
but
Maz Kanata is like 5,000 years old with a giant head, and you know.
But on the flip side, she's in Black Panther. She's one of the main people in Black Panther.
Which hasn't come out yet, though. So she's in that sweet spot where nobody knows who she is. She should enjoy it.
Except for me. She's my queen. How dare you? She's my queen.
Where she is a good place, you know?
Yeah, but she was running around dressed as the Pink Ranger, and it was really cute. I love her. I want to hug her. I can't wait. Okay, anyway. Okay, Darkness on Umbara. Ready?
I'm ready.
We're done with tangents. Tangents. Done. Clones. Forever and always. I love them.
Now I'm going to try to tangent just to see if I can pull you off course.
I will hang up on you, Honeywell. I will invoke the shut the fuck up, Chris, rule.
Ooh, okay.
I will invoke it.
I don't know. I'm sly. I might be able to do it without you even knowing it. Before you know it, we're talking about, you know, like bathtubs versus showers or something like that.
You know how much I love tangenting. It'd be a difficult process to not tangent with you. It'd be like, you'd be like, hey, you're a recovering crack addict. Here's some crack. And I'd be like, oh, God, tangent crack. Oh, God.
I really shouldn't.
I really shouldn't. Okay. Anyway, Darkness on Umbara. Ready? Ready? The Darkness on Umbara is the 73rd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on October 28th, 2011. It was written by Matt Michnovitz and directed by Stuart Lee. Okay, so some extra information for you. So, to set up the Battle of Umbara and to give you some background, the reason the battle is happening is because of one event that seemed really, really small back in Season 2. It seemed like a little throwaway scene, but it had huge implications. So, do you remember the episode Senate Murders, where Padme's uncle, Senator Farr, was murdered by his helper lady, Lolo Purse?
Yes. Do you remember that?
Okay, so there's a guy in that episode named Mi Dichi. He was the one that I called a vampire lord a lot, and he looked like a vampire, and he would just appear in shadows behind Padme, and then I would make Twilight jokes. Do you remember that guy? He was really pale?
Yes, I do. Okay. Skeletor guy.
Yeah. Well, Mi Dichi was the senator for Umbara. And so when Lolo Purse assassinated him after killing Senator Farr to cover her tracks, she killed the Vampire King, and that made the Umbara people reject the Republic and succeed from it, all because she killed him. And they joined the Separatists, which is why we're fighting this battle in the first place. So the Republic is now trying to force Umbara back into the Republic because they live on a trade route, and they need that route. So it just goes to show, I thought that was a really cool note, that little tiny side throwaway scene actually had much bigger impact in politics and the effects on the war as a whole. Just because she killed the guy, we're now having the best battle ever.
How many people must die, Hope, for you to have a good Rex story?
Apparently a lot.
A lot.
A lot of people. But, no, I just thought it was so cool because it's such a little throwaway scene and you don't really think about it. And then two seasons later, we're here. And he just seemed like such a little throwaway guy. And we have this massive fight because of him. So thanks, Lolo Purse. Thanks for slaying Lolo Purse, the vampire slayer. Thank you. Purzy the vampire. Anyway, some more episode information for you. Sly Moore, who is one of Palpatine's personal aides, is also from Umbara. And I thought this was cool. Because Umbaras have colorless pupils, they can see in the ultraviolet light spectrum. So I just thought that was like a really cool thing. This is a very rare episode where there are only four voice actors in the entire episode. Matt Lantern is Anakin, James Arnold Taylor is Obi-Wan, Dee Bradley Baker is all the clones, and Dave Finoy is General Pong Krell. And there are five voice actors if you count Tom King as the narrator. Dave Finoy's other credits include the Walking Dead Telltale series, Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon on Disney XD, Archer, and then a slew of video game work. He's mostly a video game voice actor, but there was a lot of it.
So who's doing all the Umbaran voices? Because there's lots of Umbaran voices, too.
I think Dee was doing those. Mm. It didn't say on the Wikipedia. That's actually... I think...
They're kind of background. You hear them, like, through radios and stuff, but they're doing all sorts of...
Yeah, you know, that's a very, very good point. I think it might be Dee, because it's not listed on the Wikipedia. I'm looking at it right now. So, probably knowing Dee, they're probably like, can you record, like, a few extra things here and there? Oh... But it sounds like Dee, but I don't know for sure, and it doesn't say on the Wikipedia, so they failed. Anyway, All right, the Battle of Barra gave the crew of the Clone Wars a chance to create a unique new military force. Killian Plunkett describes Umbara as the video game planet and said that their military gave them opportunities for ideas that would not usually fit in the show's Republic or Separatist aesthetics. Dave Filoni described the Umbara aesthetics, I can't say that word, aesthetics as PVC plastic, and it would lend a very alien quality that would help distinguish them from a clone trooper. Also, the reason why the Umbara soldiers wear helmets is that they're pumping special gas into their helmets that makes the Umbaran militia more aggressive and increases their reflexes. The episode featurette for this week covers all four episodes of the Umbara arc. There aren't any major spoilers in it, but I'm just going to save it for the fourth episode of this arc because it was 1 a.m. and I didn't feel like typing it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
You know who else is going to save it until the fourth episode of the arc?
Wow, that's a lot of patience, Yoda. That's like 2 hours of patience of saving. That's a lot of patience, you know. You might need a cock ring to help hold that in. Yeah, or like, oh, what are they called?
Yoda has no idea what you're talking about.
I know. I should probably stop before I get myself into a world of trouble of things that I like to watch. Hey, Yoda!
Yoda has these beads. Is that what you were talking about?
No, it wasn't that.
Oh. Okay.
Hey, Yoda, why don't you just go ahead and
put them away, I will.
Okay, I can feel myself blushing. Oh my god. What's the space platitude for the week, Yoda?
The first step towards loyalty is trust in bed.
I don't know why I thought it was so funny this time. Oh my god. I think I flustered you over there, Yoda. I'm sorry. I think I flustered either Chris or Yoda, one of them. I don't know which one, which is very hard to do, so I'm quite proud of myself right now.
Yeah, it just gets classier and classier every week.
I think that was the first time I had to check myself on classy.
How high can the classy bar go? Well, we'll find out. We've got years left of this. We're only about halfway through.
I really, that was one of those things where it hit me. I was like, you know what? That's kind of a very personal thing. I should probably not share that. So I think that was the first time I ever checked myself. So it's okay.
One day.
Maybe eat it and beat it. It would be much better safe for you to eat it and beat it. So act one?
Act one.
Okay. I'm so excited. Here we go. Alright, so like I said in the extra information notes, the planet of Umbara has pulled out of the Republic. They sit on a trade shipping route, travel route thing, so it's super important to get them back. The Republic broke through the space blockade and is getting ready to invade the planet. Obi-Wan and Anakin are splitting up their troops to take the capital city. ARC Trooper Fives, hey, I love him, is joining Anakin's team to help with special assignments. He's moving on up from the east side from being that shiny back in season one. That's how that song goes, right? I don't know. Fives and Rex share a bro high five. High five! Anakin's troops must take out the Umbaran military if Obi-Wan has a chance of taking the capital city. They move out to start their attack. Their ships are under heavy fire to make it to the ground. Rex checks in with their newest rookie in the 501st. His name is Tup. He has a teardrop on his helmet, and he also has a teardrop face tattoo and a man bun. So you know that one's tough because he has a bun. It's kind of gross. I want to cut it off his head because buns are just gross in general, but still.
Doesn't the teardrop mean you killed somebody in prison? That's what I always thought.
I don't know.
That's what it means in Earth tattoo language.
Oh my god, that's kind of funny.
It's a prison tattoo, yeah. I mean, you get teardrop for every person you've killed.
No, I'm laughing because you just, like, heavily foreshadowed in season 6.
Oh,
excellent. And you didn't even
excellent.
Know it yet. You didn't even know it yet, so there you go.
I don't even know what I'm doing.
There's
story
your prison,
of my life.
Prison foreshadowing for Tup. Okay. And so he has a mun, and Tup, and you guys need to know something about Tup. Ready? Because I just pretty much said it. Like five, Tup is important, so I would keep an eye on him too. But right now, Tup is really nervous because he's a precious cinnamon roll, because this battle is really intense, and he's a precious baby, and he needs to be protected at all times. There's also another clone making his first appearance. Technically, it's his second appearance, but this is his first full appearance, and his name is Hardcase. And he is locked and loaded, and he's ready to chew some bubblegum and take some names, and he's all out of bubblegum, so he's gonna kick some ass, and yeah! Hardcase, let's go kill something, you guys! Woo! So the first wave of groundwalkers land on the planet, because I don't care enough to look up their actual names, they're just groundwalkers now. And they charge the Umbarans! They clear a path for Anakin, Rex, and the rest of the 501st to land. They fight their way across the land, and Tup, baby Tup is like, guys, it's super dark, I can't see the enemy. And my favorite Sassmaster clone, Jesse, jokes, well, that's why they're called the Shadow People, Tup. Hardcase trips over a vine, but he keeps moving. Except that it's not a vine, it's a Venus flytrap monster with vines for arms. And the beast grabs Five's Hardcase and another clone. The poor nameless clone, who I'm going to name Fly Boy, because he gets eaten like a fly, gets eaten! And Hardcase shoots that thing, but Fives drops a mine in its mouth. The beast blows up. The 501st take the ridge and check where Obi-Wan is. An overachieving clone named Dogma reports to Anakin. Anakin tells him to go get some rest, and Dogma is like, I don't need rest, sir, I'm perfect. And Rex is like, bro, chill out. The general gave you an order to get some rest, go do it. And Dogma runs off, and Rex says that Dogma's a bit wound tight, but he's loyal. And Anakin finally says that Dogma reminds him of Rex. And Rex is like, yeah, like back in season one, before I met Cutler Quain and went through a ton of battles and went through a lot of shit and fought beside you, Brute Boo. And they have won the first wave. Oh, what do you think of Act One, Chris?
It's interesting.
How so?
Well, this is an invasion. Rather than, usually they're there to fight with the people of the planet against the Separatists. They're invading the Umbarans planet and just wiping out Umbarans.
Yeah, because, like, you know, I kind of thought about that, because, like, do they do this with all the people who left the Republic?
Yeah, exactly. They're just cut, you know, I mean, you'd think if somebody wants to join the Separatists, I guess you can join the Separatists, you know, and be in battle and stuff. So I guess they're enemies at that point. But yeah, they're just coming in and shooting these guys up on their own planet. It's not unexpected in the context of this war. It's just not something we've seen really up until now.
That's true, and it kind of makes the Republic and the Jedi kind of look like bad guys.
Yeah, they're the invaders.
Yeah.
They're on these guys' home turf. There's some other Vietnam sort of stuff coming up in this episode too that I'll mention.
That's a very, very good point, because I was like this feels almost like a D-Day invasion, but no, that was more Geonosis. Geonosis felt more like a D-Day invasion, and no, I couldn't put my finger on it.
This is
Vietnam.
Vietnam
is a much better.
This is where they're coming up. They're sneaking up behind them. They're on their home turf and. You know, these guys are constantly coming up behind them. You know, they're fighting from the front, and then all of a sudden they're behind them. They use the term back in the day, which is funny, a very, very modern American term.
Mm-hmm.
My only other note is they had those sort of TIE fighter-looking weapons, Separatist weapons. I love the sound effect of them when they fired.
You know, after the war, I didn't put in the notes, but after the war, Palpatine used a lot of the Umbara technology to influence his designs for the Empire.
Yeah, I liked the sound effects of those things. It was this had some nice sound in this episode.
There's almost like weird silence moments too.
Yeah.
Like later on when they're walking along the road, there's no music. It's just the sound of the machine walkers just going shakun shakun shakun. That's the only sound.
This is a very creepy and tense episode. This isn't a fun episode. It may be for you because it's got your characters in it, but
Oh,
I'm
no.
not saying this is a bad thing, but it's a very tense and you know, edgy episode. It's there's a lot of tension in it.
The very first time I watched this episode, I was waiting for Rex to get shot because I was like, this is going to be it. This is going to be the one. This is it. Like, I was waiting for it the entire arc. So, of course, now with Rebels, we know that none of that happened.
That's not happening.
But I remember the very first time, I was like, oh my God, my clones are all going to die. Oh no. No, I understand. There's very little chill in this episode because when there's not, like, plot tenseness, there's emotional tenseness.
Yes.
There's no chill in this episode. The most chill is when Anakin is there.
Yeah, I was going to say, the chill leaves with Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, sorry, I almost choked on a jelly belly. For me, remember, guys, Fives is really important in this arc, so watch him this entire arc. He's super important. Just throwing that back out there again. And so is Tup. So watch Tup too. I just love the design of the planet of Umbara. I think in the episode extra info that I had, describing it as a video game planet is a very good description.
It's very Tron-like.
You know, that's not how I thought of it, but that's kind of a good comparison because it's kind of dark and luminescent.
That might be what they meant by a video game world. They didn't want to say Tron, maybe.
Yeah, but now that you mention it, that's a really good comparison, I think. But it just, the entire world is just really dark and spooky, and it's so hard. I actually, whenever I watch this, I have to turn up my brightness because it's really, if it's on normal brightness, I can't make anything out. And it just adds so much suspense to the story because you literally don't know where the enemy is coming from.
It's like, a lot like the water world we were just on.
Yeah, but better. But I like it. I just like those moments where they're just talking and you see this ball of light come hurling at them suddenly and they're just like, oh, God, we were just talking. Give us a minute. But I love how everything is glowing. There's a lot of great light play. You know how normally you have highlights and shadows on a thing? I like that the highlights are the lighting of this world. That's it. There's really no shadows because everything is so shadowed. There's no sun, there's no moon.
It's very much that the Tron world was like that, and the Tron world was also very quiet when there wasn't any music playing. You know, it was just sort of like there. There's not, like, animals running around on this planet as much, you know what I mean? Except for the occasional Venus flytrap.
Yeah, or, like, a bird that comes in the next act.
Yeah.
So, I get that. So, I love this world. I think it's such a cool world. So, Hardcase is my new favorite clone. Because he was in the Deserter, but he didn't do anything. So this is the first time, like, we're really getting to see his personality. And I just, every time he's here, I just laugh like crazy. Because he's just the big gun. And he's the big guy with the big gun. And he's just ready to shoot shit. And all he wants to do is shoot shit with his big-ass gun. Like, there's a moment where the Umbaras are running away. And he's just like, where are you going?
Yeah.
Come back here! Ha 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 ha! And I love Hardcase. He's my favorite. Though I've noticed something that usually is a no-no in writing that they have to do in this episode because it's all clones. So, a no-no I've always been taught in writing is that in normal conversation, you don't say people's name. Like, I'm not constantly going, Chris, let me tell you something.
Right.
By the way, Chris, blah, blah, blah. But in this, since they're all clones, they are constantly saying each other's names. Like there. I think the part I noticed it was Fives. He was just like, that's why they call it Shadow People, Fives. And he's like, oh, Jesse, that's really great. Thanks for telling me. Right, Fives? Okay, Tup. And
well, you know, when you're in your clone masks and stuff, it might be more helpful to talk like that anyway, just because.
But they're all different. They all have different designs. Like,
yeah.
I feel like they would know, but it's just a thing for the viewer.
And for everybody, I mean, though, you don't know it, you know. You could be looking at someone in your clone suit, and it might not look like you're looking at them. So
yeah.
I guess if you say their name, they know you're talking to. I don't know. I'm just trying to square it up.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's just something for the viewer because not everyone's me. And knows,
right.
I can just like look right at like a pattern on their clone and be like, "That's Dogma." Like I knew who Jesse was because he has that big fucking Republic symbol on his helmet. And I was just like, that's Jesse. But not everybody knows that. So I've taken a lot of time to memorize all their symbols and stuff.
Yes.
That was the early part of my fandom.
You're not the casual viewer.
Yeah, I'm not of the clones. I'm not. So, which always makes me worry about Jesse and his poor preciousness of why, if he survived Order 66, because he has a massive Republic tattoo on his face. So I worry about him a lot in my spare time. Sometimes I do that. If I ever met Dave Filoni, that's one of my very first questions is what happened to Jesse? Because I want to know. Anyway, so my next note, Tup is so precious. He's the new baby rookie, and he's the baby brother of the group, and he's like the baby brother, and he's running into battle, and he's precious, and I love him, and he's so eager. Like, everybody was just like coolly hanging on the ship with one hand, and he's gripping it with two hands, just like, ah! He's precious, and I love Tup. I love him. Anyway, so I started thinking about it. It's been a while since we've had a really big clone battle like this that's both on the air and on the ground. I think the last one was Geonosis.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one's just as brutal. I think this one's a little scarier, though, because with at least Geonosis, everything was in the sunlight. You can't see anything in this battle. You just see things exploding.
You just know 2 seconds before you're going to die.
Yeah, so I think that makes it a little bit more scarier because, like, even when they were trying to land the ships, the pilot was just like, I have to turn off the lights. I can't see anything. And so I think that makes it a lot more scarier because he couldn't dodge anything that was coming at him. But yeah, like, we haven't had any massive, really, I guess the water world kind of, but even then there wasn't a lot of clones. They were mostly Gungans and squids. Mon Cala, yeah. That was the one I'm looking for. And my last note is, I just love Jesse. He's the biggest joker of the 501st, and he's just dropping sarcasm all over the battlefield with, like, he's dropping it faster than Denim Barnes, and I love him. I love Jesse. He's the one that I worry about because he has the big Republic symbol tattooed on his face.
And target.
I get scared of him in the Empire. He, like, never could take off his helmet in real life, and I get scared for him. I need to know. He's the only member of the 501st that we don't know the fate of. And I wonder about that a lot. I think about it at night. I was thinking about it last night. And I thought about it last week, actually. Not even lying. I was thinking about it last week. I get scared for my clones. They make me anxious, Chris.
I noticed.
I get anxious. They all have to be okay, but I know the majority of them are not. That's all I have for Act 1.
You're picking cannon fodder to be worried about. That's, not good.
This is why I can never watch Game of Thrones. Because I know, geez. I'll be like, oh, baby, I love you. And then they'll be dead within an hour. And I'll be like, oh, God.
Yeah, you'll lose a lot of friends on Game of Thrones for sure. You get to see a lot of horrible people get killed too, though. So that's always satisfying.
My coworker says, if I can read the comic Saga, I can watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you would love Game of Thrones. Yeah, everybody loves Game of Thrones. It's very lovable. It's great. Sex and violence and good writing and good acting.
Yeah, Saga is one of my favorite comics. And my coworker also reads Saga and watches Game of Thrones, and she is like, I think sometimes Saga hurts more because. You know everybody much more personally, and Game of Thrones has such a big cast that sometimes someone dies and you don't remember who they are. But I know me, I would get super attached to people, and I'd be really sad a lot of times. So, we'll see. Well, Act 2?
Act 2.
All right, Act 2. Our boys are waiting to start the next attack. Behind their lines, Umbaran soldiers release a mechanical bug. It attacks our heroes. And with them distracted, the Umbaras attack the clones from behind. Rex tells Anakin that they should call in an airstrike and move the men to the south to get them out of the blast range. Anakin thinks this is an excellent plan, because Anakin knows the value of Rex's opinion. And Anakin calls for a retreat, and Anakin and Rex cover all their men, and they are the last ones to leave to protect the other clones because they are the best. And they escape and wait in silence, hoping the bombers will come. It's tense for several moments. finally, the bombers come through and blast the ridge. And Anakin's really glad they got off the ridge, thanks to Rex's advice. And Hardcase is like, woo! They lit up more than a corn dog on the 4th of July in fireworks! Yeah! Because I love Hardcase. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't. What happened?
I heard my dad in the next room just go, woo!
No.
He heard me and he wooed back at me. Anyway, the 501st is moving out. Another Republic ship arrives. If that picks up on the audio, you need to amplify that by like 20. The 501st is moving out, but then another Republic ship arrives. Another Jedi Master, General Pong Krell, approaches Anakin. He's a big dude with four arms, and he's the same species as Obi-Wan's diner friend from the prequels, only he's not some pudgy diner owner. This guy is four arms of powerful deadliness. Everyone knows this guy. He's a known Jedi general who has extremely high casualty rates and low morale among his clone troopers. Still, he gets the job done. Anakin is like, hey, Scarecrow. What are you doing here with my men in the middle of a battle? And Krell says that the Jedi Councilor and Palpatine want Anakin back on Coruscant immediately with no discussion. And Anakin is like, I'm in the middle of a very important battle with my best friend Rex here and my 501st brothers. I can't leave them. Krell says he would lead Anakin's men into battle. It's Rex assuring Anakin that they have it under control that convinces Anakin to leave, because Anakin always listens to his best friend and favorite boo, Rex. Anakin introduces Rex and tells Krell that Rex is the finest soldier in his squad. And with that, Anakin leaves the 501st under Krell's control. Shit starts going down the second Anakin leaves. Rex is like, it's an honor to serve under you, General. And Krell looks at him and goes, you're a clone. You're not smart enough to understand things like honor and valor. You're a tool for us to win this war. And Rex is like, excuse you? What? And Krell tells a very taken aback and shocked Rex to always stand at attention while being addressed. Rex follows orders, but he does not look comfortable at all. Krell gets in Five space and tells him that he does things by the book and by protocol. Krell tells them to get ready and move out. Fives drops a silent, I am judging you, look at Rex. And Rex exchanges a silent look of, just go with it, man. And they get ready to move out. What do you think about it, too?
Well, there's a Vietnam. The airstrike was totally out of Vietnam. That was a totally Vietnam sort of thing.
Yeah.
Krell's a douche.
Krell is a douche. He's a douche canoe. I think I actually put that in Act 3, that he is a douche canoe.
I mean, yeah. you find...
Third line of Act 3 is douche canoe.
It's jarring because right from Episode 1 of this, they've been humanizing the clones. And we get to see the clones being treated like shit in depth, you know, really, yeah, for the first time. And this is where I started realizing I might have seen this one.
Which really makes me upset, because I was hoping it was all new to you.
Sorry. But yeah, Krell, like, refers to them by their numbers instead of their names and stuff. And it's not even, you know, I could understand a Tarkin or something like that being a, you know, treating them. But this guy's a Jedi.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't that part of the Jedi code is to, like, honor quality of life and all
life.
That?
Just to be into life, you know, and all the other Jedi seem to realize that about the clones, you know.
Yeah, like even we were talking about it, I think, last week with Plo Koon. Like, you know, while Plo Koon is certainly not Anakin, he still values his troopers. Like, yeah, you know, we saw that in the Malevolence arc. They were like, we're just clones, General. And he's like, no, you're people. You're my people. You're my men. I'm going to protect you.
Yeah, and they're fighting alongside of him, whereas Krell is just like, you know, using them like chess pieces.
I have to wonder about who his commander clone is and what his commander clone thinks of him. I wish we, like...
He probably goes through a lot of commander clones. He probably had a bunch of them. You know, he probably doesn't have any long-term relationships with them like Anakin and Rex, because they probably aren't around very long.
Yeah.
His platoon is probably the place you go to die.
Yeah, I can see most people don't like being a part of his platoon.
Yeah, Why would you?
I added in here, I didn't realize it wasn't until next episode that they were like, he has very high casualty rates and low morale among his men. I thought that was in this episode, but hey, it's in next week's episode, so, but that is a fact of this arc.
Yep, so that ratcheted up the tension for me, because I was like, oh, I don't like this guy, and he's going to get people killed.
Especially talking to Rex, like someone that the viewers know is right. A known hero. Like, we've been with Rex, I mean, since the beginning, and we've been going with this journey.
We trust Rex more than we trust this guy, you know, not to bungle the whole thing. And they had a nice Anakin plan ahead of time that sounded nice and adventuresome and right up their alley, and he's just like, no, I'm just going to march you guys in, like, the Revolutionary War. and you guys just block, most of the blaster fire. That's what you're there for.
Yeah, I have a note about that in Act 3.
So, yeah, he's a douche. That's about all I got on this act.
Yeah. I have a new nickname. Instead of Tarkin, it's Tarkrell.
Tarkrell. That sounds like a Klingon name.
Tarkrell does.
Actually, Krell is the name of the aliens, the extinct alien race in the movie Forbidden Planet.
I don't know what that movie is.
Oh, Hope. You've never seen Forbidden Planet? It's where Robbie the Robot got his start.
No. What's that about?
Oh, it's a wonderful old science fiction movie. With Leslie Nielsen in it.
No way!
Yeah, when he was the dashing leading man instead of a comedy, you know, parody actor, he used to be dashing leading man.
Well,
I highly recommend that movie. It's one of my favorite science fiction movies of all time. The special effects are way ahead of the time. The music and sound effects are just amazing. The set design, everything about the story. I used to, when I was a little kid, my parents would let me stay up. They'd play it as a midnight movie. And that was one of the few movies I got to stay up and watch.
What's the basic plot of it?
They go to a planet where that had been that had a crew to explore it sent and never heard back from them, and they go back and they find the crew's all dead and there's one scientist left and his daughter, and the planet is covered with this humongous civilization that's been abandoned. The people have died out, but they were very advanced. They were these huge creatures that were super advanced, and he's been stranded on the planet with his daughter, but he's been using their machines to make his mind stronger, and it's a play on, I believe, The Tempest by William Shakespeare. It's Leslie Nielsen and his crew come in, and Leslie Nielsen starts falling in love with the daughter, and their ship starts getting attacked by this giant invisible creature, which you later find out is like subconscious id of Professor Morbius. And it's great. It's Robbie the Robot. It's the sound effects, the early electronic music and sound effects are really atmospheric and great. Highly, 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 highly recommend it.
Huh. I've really never heard of that movie.
It was, I want to say Warner Brothers made it, or Universal. Somebody made it, and they put a lot of money, you know, they put a lot of money into it. So it was it's not a B movie sign. It's one of the rare, like, let's spend some money and get a good script science fiction movies. And it shows. It's a lot of people credited as one of the like an influence on Star Trek.
Oh, my notes for this one, other than Tarkrell. Well, you already answered one of my questions, which was, what was your first impression of Krell? He's a douche canoe.
He's a big douche.
Right. He is a douchebag. All right, so. So I thought it was an important thing to note for this episode, not only for this episode, for the arc as a whole, is they spend a lot of time with Rex and Anakin in these opening two acts. And we see Anakin takes Rex's advice and his suggestions very seriously.
And we see why, too, in this episode, because Rex has saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, and probably including Anakin's.
Right.
And he respects aspects. And he knows that Rex will do what is best for his team and for the Republic. And this is the complete opposite of when Krell comes into the picture. We can, you know, Rex saved everybody twice in this episode.
Yep, and, you know, that scene where he's like, yeah, we should probably move, and blah, 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 and Anakin's like, yeah, that's a good idea, and then you see it happen, and it's just like, and Anakin's like, oh, good plan, Rex.
He's like, oh, that was a good call. We were just up there, and Rex was like, I know. I was there, sir.
Yep, that wouldn't have happened with Krell either. Krell would have just told him to shut STFU.
Yeah. So I'm actually really glad that they, like, didn't... Because for some reason I thought Anakin got pulled out of the first act, and I didn't realize he was in the... I forgot that he was on this episode as long as he was. So I'm really glad that they kept him that, like, extra few minutes just to really, like, embed, like, this is why Anakin and Rex are such a good team, and this is why Anakin listens to Rex, because he knows what the hell he's talking about. And so when Krell shows up, like, all that's thrown out the window. So,
yes.
So I have to wonder why Palpatine wanted Anakin to come back to Coruscant in the middle of a battle. And I have a theory about why I think this is, but I'm going to wait to share that theory until episode 4 of this arc, because my theory includes spoilers for the arc.
Oh, okay.
But I just wanted to throw that out
Stick
there.
Stick a pin in that then, listeners.
Yeah, because it's such a weird thing, because like, they're in the middle of this massive battle, they need to take back this planet, and they pull out one of their best generals. It just seems like an odd thing to do. But the more I started thinking about it, I was like, you know what? I have a really good theory, but it's all revolving around episode 4 of this arc. So I just wanted to throw that out there as something to ponder, but I do have a theory of why he did that. So the moment Krill opens his mouth, dismissing clones and saying that they're not smart enough to understand honor and valor, I knew I would hate this guy, and I still hate this guy till today. I remember the first time I watched this episode, I was just like, who is this man? He knows not of what he speaks. Like, I remember just being so angry at my television the first time I saw this episode.
Well, when he says that they don't know about honor and valor, it's just like, oh man, this guy isn't inspiring honor and valor amongst his clones, obviously. Or he just doesn't see it. He's not paying attention, which is weird, too.
That's weird for a Jedi.
Yeah.
But I think my exact reaction the first time I heard Krell talk, it was, oh, bitch!
Someone needs a big glass of shut the fuck up juice.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be the new rule, the shut the fuck up, Krell. Shut the fuck up, Krell! But I do think that Krell is a very interesting character, because he's supposed to be a Jedi, and the Jedi are heroes, and Krell's a dick. And he doesn't believe in quality of life for the clones. And it kind of reminds me of the very first question I asked you and Scott at DragonCon when we first met about whether or not the Jedi are good guys for purposely breeding clones for war.
No, they are. And they suffer. And they die out because they did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the clones that end up wiping them out.
But so. I think it's really interesting because Krell brings this, like... He's a Jedi that we've never seen before. Like, even, like, Windu is really serious, but at least he understands that his clones are people and have feelings. And, yes. Like, they're worth something.
Well, you notice Krell is perfectly fine with Anakin. You know, he
yeah.
And he respectfully tells him, look, the Emperor wants you to go, I'll take care of it. And they have a decent conversation. Anakin's not too happy about Krell the way he is with clones, but Krell is very respectful and, you know, hey, fellow Jedi, how's it going, you know? He's he's like a normal general coming in, and only when the clones come, he's just like, never mind, peasants, you know? So
peasants.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've never seen a Jedi like Krell before, and he is very, without giving away spoilers and stuff, I find him very interesting because he's also foreshadowing to me a character in season 5. How do I put this without giving stuff away? There is an arc in season 5 where something bad happens. And it's because of a Jedi. And it's one of those things that it shows that how... he's probably not the only Jedi to be doing stuff like this.
Oh, I'm sure he's not.
So he's kind of the first. But it's interesting because he is the first. And
there could be a lot of them, but we've been sticking with, you know,
Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka.
Yeah, with the 501st.
And their friends.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kind of fun to get this outside character we've never really seen before, to get that other perspective, because he's not a legacy character. We know Mace Windu is not changing. No matter how serious he is, he will still always be Mace Windu. And he's not Ahsoka, who's a Padawan and learning and stuff like that. He's a Jedi Master who's established and
accomplished. He's got a good reputation for results, just not a good reputation if you're a clone.
Yeah. So I think he's a very interesting character, especially to bring in pretty much right in the middle of the series. This is right around the midpoint of the series. Yep. And he's a good character to bring in to kind of show how this war is changing and affecting people, I think, is a good way of putting it. So my poor Rex.
Yeah, you know, that made me think, you know, he kind of like is a Jedi who embraced being a general, whereas all the other Jedi are sort of like, yeah, we'll do this if we have to.
Oh, it's kind of like in the Citadel arc when Tarkin and Anakin were talking, and Anakin was like, I wish the Jedi could do more. Krell is that guy.
Yeah. Krell sort of is more of like a warrior general Jedi than like a reluctant warrior Jedi.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. That's a very good point. This is the guy that Anakin and Tarkin were talking about. It looks like this guy's. Here he is. It's Pong Krell.
Except I don't think Anakin would. If Anakin was like a fly on the wall during this battle, he'd be getting pissed.
Yeah, that would have been so interesting if Anakin stayed, but it also would keep. We wouldn't get the story that we get.
Right, Anakin would be in command. It would be interesting if Anakin had some sort of link with them, and he was checking back and like, oh god, because that would drive Anakin nuts to know what was going on with his clones and having to be like. Sitting and listen to a boring Palpatine story again, you know. Okay, Darth Plagueis again. Thanks, dude.
I know. Why are we at the opera? I don't care. I mean, especially since, like, we know that Anakin considers these people his friends. Like, these are clearly Rex is his friend. And they're obviously, I mean, we've already established Rex knows that him and Padme are together. Like, Rex has one of Anakin's biggest secrets under his belt. So... I mean, like, so this is somebody that Anakin really trusts, and it would be driving him mad, and he would not want to go to Water Cirque du Soleil with Palpatine again.
Right.
So my poor Rex stuck between a hard place and a rock, you know, he just wants to keep shit together and survive.
Stuck between a hard case and a rock?
Oh, I love hard case. He's so crazy. I love him.
He's so crazy.
He is my favorite. Well, one of my favorites of this arc. I love hard case. And finally, my last note is I'm just really glad that they improved the animation by this episode. I highly suggest closely watching all the clones' expressions throughout the arc, because they really improved. This was the arc that they super improved how expressive the clones are. And Fives is a really good example. There's a scene where Fives says so much without uttering a single word. Like when he kind of shoots Grex that kind of head drop look, and Rex just kind of like scrunches his nose at him.
Yeah, what am I gonna do? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so much fun because the clones are way more expressive in this arc, and it also really helps with their individual characters. Like if you see, we'll see it more like in the next episode, in episode 3 and episode 4, that Tup really is the rookie. Like, so a lot of times, like, all the big boys are talking and Tup's in the background, like, wide-eyed looking between them, like, why are we doing this again? Well, Fives is just, like, super sarcastic and, like, rolling his eyes. And we saw that with Wolf last week. Like, Wolf rolled his eyes. What did I do? Counted, like, 7 times or something? So I'm really glad that they have the animation improved, because it really helps the clones and their personalities to really capture who they are as people.
I agree. I'm loving the new animation this season.
Yeah, though I don't know if it's the shadows of this world, but, like, Rex is looking particularly very gaunt. Like, his cheekbones are super ripped. So, yeah. But that's all I had for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
Nope. I'm ready for Act 3.
Okay, so I forgot how long this was. Here we go. Act 3! The troops move out across the Umbaran wilderness. Krell is barking orders for them to quicken their pace. And Fives is like, Rex, bro, this new guy is sort of a douche canoe. And Rex tries to defend Krell, saying that they're just doing things by the book. And Fives is like, he's been here 5 minutes, and he's already pissing off the men. I mean, I'm pissed off. The only way I could be more pissed off is if Krell pissed on me, which I don't think is actually below him. I think he would actually do it. And Rex says, look, Krell is in charge. We have to take this planet. We are soldiers. We follow orders, whether we like it or not. And then two luminescent birds fly in, and they kidnap a couple clones. Krell jumps in, kills the birds, easily showing off his dual Darth Maul lightsaber-wielding powers of fun with his forearms. And then Krell blames the clones, not the animals that attacked them, for losing time. Because he's a dick. And they press on. After a few hours, the men are tired. Rex goes to Krell to ask for a break, since the men can't fight if they're exhausted. Rex points out a ridge that would be a good place for a camp. And Krell is like, are you kidding me? There will be no resting, CT-7567. Because Krell doesn't call him by Rex. He calls him by his clone number. It takes Rex a second to realize that Krell isn't using his name. He's not CT-7567. He's Rex. Rex pushes again for his men to get a break. Krell doesn't want to hear none of that. He flat out says the other troops are counting on them. So if they want a break, the clones will be the failure of the entire campaign. Rex has no choice but to tell his men to keep moving. They come to a road that leads to the city that they need to take. It looks abandoned, but that's probably not the case. Rex tells Krell that they've been ready to execute Anakin's plan to sneak in, capture the city, stuff like that. Krell is like, what? No, we are scrapping that plan. You are going to march all the troops down that road in the open with no cover right up to the city walls. And Rex is like, that's crazy. We're going to have really high casualties. And we're on a really dark planet. There's no sun and moon. We don't know what we're up against. They could be right behind that flower. Right there, right now, behind that flower. And we couldn't see them. And Krell is like, are you questioning my orders, Captain? And Rex is like, look, I just want to protect my men. And Krell is like, I don't give a shit. Follow my orders or else. And Rex has no choice but to follow orders. He gathers his men and leads them out into the road. Baby Tup, looks around. He's like, guys, I don't understand what's happening here. Why are we just marching out in the open? I was taught in Kamino Clone School that this is a really stupid plan, guys. And Hardcase is like, woo, I just want to shoot something, yeah! And Fives flat out says, no, Tup, you're right. This is a really terrible plan. But actual suck-up Dogma is like, guys, the general is brilliant. This plan is brilliant. I lost my spot. Where am I? The plan is brilliant, and we're going to be awesome because Krell is the greatest. And Fives is like, Dogma, I'll talk to you when you get your head out of Krell's ass. Please shut up now. And Fives goes to Rex and he's like, bro, reason with me here. You know this is a terrible plan. And Rex tries to reason back, saying, you know, I went through the protocol. I raised my concerns. He doesn't agree. He's the general, so this is the plan. And then, guys, here it is. Fives asks the million-dollar clone doubting the war question. And he says, word for word, what if Krell is wrong? And Rex shuts that down really fast because they need to be alert and ready for battle. Right on cue, two clones step on mines, giving away their cover. Fives sweeps the road, finding more mines, and then a blast comes in from behind, and the next fight breaks out. Our clone heroes are completely exposed and surrounded by Umbaran soldiers. But Hardcase is having a great time with his big-ass gun shooting shit. One Umbaran jumps down on Fives. Fives punches out the dude's helmet and gives a cool guy shot to the face with his blaster, because Fives is a cool guy. The clones are going down fast. Rex finally makes the call against Krell's orders. He calls for the retreat to back up the road to draw out the Umbarans. If they pull out, they can see the enemy, and then the clones can shoot them down. Krell watches it with disapproval as they retreat. He finally calls for reinforcements to go help Rex and his men. With the backup, the 501st is finally able to push back the Umbarans. and Hardcase is still having an excellent time shooting at shit. The clones are finally safe for now. Until Krell rolls onto the scene, and he's not happy at all. He asks Rex if there's a malfunction in his design, and I all but punch Krell through my computer screen, insinuating that the clones are things and not people. And Rex starts to take the blame, but Fives, God bless him, bless Fives, stands up for his bro. And Fives is all like, whoa, slow down there, asshole. We were dying out there, and I didn't see your ugly ass out there with us with your two-sided lightsabers to help us out. Surely you saw how Rex saved this platoon. Surely a Jedi wouldn't fail to see that. And Krell pulls a lightsaber on Fives, threatening him to stand down or else. And with his bro in danger, Rex finally steps in going, dude, Krell, look, I followed your orders against my better judgment. I was right, because we lost a lot of good men, not clones, good men with feelings and thoughts and emotions. I added that part. But good men are dead because of your plan. I have a duty to your command, and I have a duty to the Republic, but I also have a duty to these men right here to make sure that they survive. I will protect them no matter what, and I will always do that duty. And Krell realizes he's outnumbered, and he puts his lightsaber away, and he sort of gives Rex a compliment. Krell admits that he's not Anakin, but buck it up, Buttercup. I'm a tough general, and you gotta get used to that. And then Krell sort of compliments Rex again, and he dismisses Krell, noting his opinion. The moment doesn't last for long as they come under fire again. Fives is like, don't you think this is the stupidest thing we've ever done? And Rex is like, let's survive until next week, and I'll get back to you on that. The end.
Yeah, I had the same question as you. Where the hell was Krell during that ambush?
That was one of my notes, like, because it's one of those things where, like, Anakin very often is right up front with his men, protecting his men, fighting with his men, and Krell's all the way up on a fucking ridge.
Krell was showing what a kick-ass he was earlier, and then all of a sudden, when the shit hits a fan, he's not there. He could have been. It's always really useful to have a Jedi sitting there deflecting all those lasers, you know, but that's the thing,
yeah.
Is he's not going to fight with his men. He just sort of does stuff on his own, and yeah, it's very annoying. But he does call him by name, at least.
Yeah, he finally, that's true. He does, but, like, that was one of the things that made me the most mad, because, like, we saw in the beginning of the episode, Anakin was protecting his men's back as they were retreating, and Krell's up there on a ridge, watching.
In Krell's defense of malfunctioning clones, mm-hmm. I would think if you're walking down enemy road, you would probably pull out the landmine bombs lights right off the bat, not wait till someone got blown up to be like, oh, we've got lights that light up all the bombs on the ground.
Yeah,
I would have those mounted to the front of every one of those walkers, you know?
But he was calling them malfunctioning because of the fact that they retreated to save themselves.
I'm just saying, I know, I just say it. I would, if I had landmine detecting lights, I would have those shining on every, you know, ahead of wherever we were walking on enemy territory.
Yeah.
But that's just a minor quibble. That's all I really had for this. I think it's kind of rude that he pulled out a lightsaber on a clone. What's he going to do, cut his head off? That would be pretty intense.
Like, is his dick so small he has to pull out his lightsaber to show his authority? They all know that he's a Jedi. They all know that he can parkour everywhere and use the Force and strangle them all.
Yeah, he can.
Like, what's the point?
They're clones. They're not going to attack the Jedi anyway. He was just getting loud.
Not yet, anyway. Wait till episode three.
Right. But at this point.
But yeah, like, that's that moment always makes me nervous, because there's Fives, and all Fives is doing is, like, standing up Rex. He was like, you put us in that terrible situation, this is your fault. And Krell is just like, lightsaber to the neck, whose fault is this? And Fives is just like, it's yours, bro. It's your fault, bro. We lost, good job. But, like, I like that moment too, because it also made Rex stand up for Fives and, like, stand up for his men, and I think that was the first big step for Rex in this arc. So, but, okay, the rest of my slew of notes, ready? Here we go. So I do really like this episode for the very hard place that Rex is in. It's so important that in the first act we see Anakin has full trust in Rex. And Rex is the one that got them off the ridge before blow up. And Rex trusts all of his troopers. Like, he trusts Fives, Dogma, all of them. This is what Rex is used to. And Rex has a ton of freedom under Anakin, which makes him a very unique clone, because that's why he's been able to grow so much. And now with Crow, that's all ripped away from Rex in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And it's what makes this arc so interesting for Rex's journey, because he's trying to balance being a good soldier with doing what's right. And I think Fives is right on the money with that million-dollar question of, what if Krell is wrong? But yeah, I think Fives asked the million-dollar question, what if Krell is wrong?
And he was.
What do you think that means for them, though, like, as clones?
What do you mean? It plants doubt in their head. For sure, you know?
Yeah. But,
I mean...
They're
bred for loyalty, but at the same time, they obviously are, you know, also bred for intelligence. So by now, they've got to know that there's different types of generals and different types of leadership and all that. So they understand the situation they're in. It's just a crappy situation because that's the thing. This reminds me of, like, stories of modern day racism, where, you know, you'll have somebody who's, say, they grew up in a town where nobody really cared, you know, whatever minority group they belong to, or, you know, but then all of a sudden they go away to somewhere else it's very similar to someone who's like the woman who was I think she was a state's attorney. She got pulled over, you know, by the cops.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
And it's like, all right, you're a state's attorney, you've done all this stuff, she's an attorney, she went through law school, and she's now working, you know, she's an intelligent, productive member of society on the higher tiers of society, but when she's driving through the wrong neighborhood, she's just another black person that gets pulled over, you know?
My favorite part of that video is they're like, who are you? And she's like, the state attorney. And they're like, oh, bye.
and these clones have, yeah, exactly. He's like, well, moving on. And these clones have just sort of been used to, well, they've earned it too. They've earned the leeway that they've gotten, but under Anakin and Obi-Wan and Yoda, even Yoda directly was giving him pep talks about how you're people and have feelings and don't forget that you're not you're not just cannon fodder. So they were used to that, but then all of a sudden, here it is, just a reminder to you guys, under different circumstances, you're not going to have that leeway and there's nothing you can do about it, you know? This guy could tell you to march into that hole over there and fill in the hole with your dead bodies so that he can march over it. And what are you going to do? You know, you can't.
Fives would be like, just jump over it. You're a Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Fives would probably lose his head.
Right. He would be the first one in. Yeah. And his head. And so, like, all of a sudden, they're given that reminder. Don't, you know, make no mistake. If Anakin's not here, you're just cannon fodder again. You're not people, you know.
When you're referred to
as a number, that's, you know, way different.
It's not the situation of when the cat's away, the mice will play. It's there's an exterminator there with the mice.
Right.
To keep them in check. You know, I want you to clarify something, though, because you said that, what was it, it's placing doubt in their loyalty. Do you think it's placing doubt in their loyalty to the Republic or to the Jedi or to both?
To both. You know, the Jedi are just an extension of the Republic as far as I would imagine a clone would be concerned. You know, it's the same sort of thing.
Because before the war, they were just peacekeepers. They weren't generals, you know.
Right.
They were, the Jedi were just as much thrust into the war as the clones were.
You know, I was just going to say, you know, well, the Republic are the ones running the war, but then again, the Jedi are the ones that ordered up the clones, too, so.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a story arc about that.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was under the Jedi that it happened, but at the same time, it was one of those, it was also... They are just as much pushed into this war as well. So I think that's another reason why the Jedi are usually outside of Krell so sympathetic, because, I mean, we've seen Ahsoka and Barra Sofri, like, way back in Season 2. They're like, why are we fighting in this war? We're Jedi. And Satine questioned Obi-Wan about it, too. She's like, aren't you guys peacekeepers? And Obi-Wan's like, I don't even know anymore. So I think that's what makes them so sympathetic to the clones, because they're kind of equally in that position, too, in a position that they're not usually in. But here are the clones, like, they were purposely made for this. The Jedi weren't, but I feel like Krell is just like, ha-ha, battle!
Yes, he is. He's very cavalier with clone lives.
Yeah. But that's a good point. You know, this art actually makes me wonder how much Rex really thinks about Cut McClane from the Deserter episode. He was the one that, like, left the army. He had a family of Twi'lek people, and he fought with them, with Rex, to protect them and stuff like that. Because Rex, Cut got that freedom. And every once in a while, I just wonder how much that influenced Rex about, like, I could have another life.
I'm sure he thinks that, but that's not in the cards for Rex. But I'll bet you he looks at Fives and goes, yeah, that Five someday could run off.
Yeah, I would say that too. I think Brett Fives would be the very first one to be like, yeah,
yep.
Actually, no.
I'm out.
No, actually, because of, and I'm only saying this because I know Fives' whole journey, Fives is more of the type that he stays because he's there to protect his brothers.
Right.
He is the very first one, and we talked about this in the Citadel arc, he's the first one to question shit. He's the first one to question this war, and he's already questioning the Republic and the Jedi and their orders.
Yeah, but if you're a questioner, though, sometimes you reach that point where something messed up happens, and you just go, yep, this is it, you know?
But he's there right now at this point because he wants to be there to protect his brothers. That's it. He's not there for anything else. He's there for his brothers.
I think if he reached his last fuck to give, he would basically be, and was going to leave, he would basically not just desert, he would be like, come on, you guys, come with me. This is ridiculous. Who's with me, you know?
Yeah. Also, Krell really reminds me of being in an abusive relationship. Like, he victim blames the clones for being attacked by the animals that they had no control over. He uses tactics of belittling the clones by calling them by their number and not their names, which dehumanizes them. He guilts the clones because he's just like, people are counting on you. If you guys want to rest, that's fine. But if we miss our target, it's your fault. And people are counting on us. And he talks to Rex like he's an object that has a malfunction in his design.
Yeah, he's not.
Yeah, so like, Krell just reminds me of all the symptoms of a terrible abusive relationship.
But yeah, he pulled a weapon on him.
He pulled a weapon on Fives, yeah. That's not cool. But I also like seeing how the Fives syndrome is kind of starting to spread, because all the clones, except for Dogma, are starting to question Krell. Like, because even Tup the Rookie, like, you know, like, there was something off about them marching down a road in the open. He's like, guys, I'm a rookie. This is a terrible plan. So I like seeing how it's starting to spread throughout all the ranks of, except for Dogma. Dogma's the ass kisser. But, you know, Dogma's a character I also really like, too. I like that seeing that he's a clone with a different opinion. And Dogma is very important to this narrative. There's a reason he's there. And he's the one that's siding with Krell. And he's trying to be a good soldier. Because they're all good soldiers. But the rest of the file first that something is really, really terrible wrong there. So I think it's kind of cool to have Dogma there as a counterpoint to be like, you know, guys, we should be, like, he's trying to be the good soldier, while everybody else is like, yeah, but good soldiers don't always sometimes get crappy orders. And he's like, no, the orders are great, because they're from the commander.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
We were going to add anything. But I like having Dogma there as a counterpoint. And that's the point about Krell not being there. And finally, my last note was, I just love that moment at the end when Rex finally stands up to Krell and saying that they're not clones, they're good men.
Well, then Krell does the like, oh, you stood up to me, now I respect you a little bit.
Well, if you see, like, as Rex is talking, Krell looks over all the clones and all the clones are staring at him. I think he had a kind of a mental note of, like, I'm really outnumbered right now.
Yeah, he probably has not been in this situation before. But I think he does. I think he does get the kernel of an idea that he's dealing with individual personalities more. And he admits it. And that's like kind of big for his character, especially as he's been set up for such a douche.
Yeah. And even then, he doesn't really compliment him.
Well, he does it gruffly and, you know, dismissively, but at the same time, he calls him Rex.
Yeah. So I like that moment, too. I think it's very important for Rex's journey as well, because this is probably the first time Rex has had to, like, talk back to a general, because he never had to do that to Anakin.
Not to this extent.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love that moment so much for Rex as a character himself, because it's a very important moment for Rex, and it's very important for him as a person, too, and as a character. And I guess that's kind of like with Ahsoka. I like to watch this show trying to see how it relates to Rebels and who she becomes in Rebels. I kind of feel that way with Rex, and I think this is a very important moment to get him to Rebels. Like, yeah, he's kind of like the crazy old uncle and stuff like that, but he's the one that's also constantly telling, like, Ezra and Kanan, like, of the Jedi he used to serve, and how that's important to them, because there are no more Jedi around. The only Jedi that Ezra knows is Kanan and Ahsoka. And so I think that's also important for, as Rex is experiencing this different kind of Jedi, this is kind of information he can pass off to Ezra to help make him a better Jedi.
True, true.
Yeah.
Making me think that I want to watch Rebels from the beginning again.
I am seriously super excited for when we get to Rebels, but we have to finish Clone Wars. Two more seasons, we're almost there!
Yeah, no, I might watch it in the interim between 2 years from now when we start covering it.
That's okay, I constantly rewatch Rebels all the time, it's fine. I know when we start getting closer to it, I'll probably hold off more. But I was watching Rebels last week because I had finished reading the Darth Maul comic. So I rewatched Twilight of the Apprentice, which was Maul's first appearance in Rebels, so... No, I feel you on that, bro. I totally feel you on that, my clone, bro. So, well, that's all I have. Do you have anything else, Chris?
No. I'm ready to score it up.
I'm ready to hear what you think of it, so
I like this episode a lot, obviously. I'm not, you know, this one's just tailor-made for you. But I liked it. It wasn't a fun, exciting episode as much as it was a tension-filled and edgy episode.
I have a question for you. I'm going to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Do you think this is one of the more mature stories they've told so far in a good show?
So far, it kind of is. It doesn't really have much tension release in it. No comedy, really. You know, I mean, Hard Case with his gun is sort of funny, but you know, you really don't get much. You know, it's less kitty for sure, especially since we've had a pretty heavy. We've had some droids and Jar Jar before this, you know, leading into this season. So yeah, so it's definitely taken a more serious turn after the first five episodes. I didn't rate it super high. I gave it an 8. It probably would have gotten an 8.5 if it hadn't just ended.
Yeah.
Just sort of been like, okay, ending, part 2's coming, you know, or whatever. I think it just sort of like, eh. But, you know, I just docked it half a point. So 8, which is that's good score. I really like this episode, and I really hate Krell.
Well, for me, hello, my favorite arc of Clone Wars. I've been waiting for you. Hello. We're here. And Umbara, you never disappoint me. I still love you every time I watch you. And I love everything about this episode. The battles are just really great, and they come out of nowhere. And it's a new world that we haven't always seen before. And the clones are shining like they've always been shining, which is nice because we really didn't have much of clones all throughout season 3, so it's nice to finally get back to them for reals. And you're seeing different opinions on different matters, like Fives versus Dogma and how they both view the general. And then there's Rex, my glorious Captain Rex. And he's stuck in the middle of this, and he's just trying to make everything work. And everything's not working, and he's just trying to keep people alive. And I actually really love hating Krell. I think he's one of the best villains of the entire show. And he's a really complex character. And I won't go into detail, but there's definitely more to him than he seems. And I've always liked him. And this arc always delivers for me, no matter how many times I've watched it. This is the arc I've watched more than any other time of Clone Wars. If I'm going to sit down to watch a random episode of Clone Wars, it's probably going to be from the Umbara arc, because I just love it so much. And I just love Hardcase and my baby Tup, but Hardcase, he's just a crazy loon, and I love him, and I laugh all the time when he's on the screen. So this is a very easy 9 out of 10, but I'm purposely rating it low, because I know what's coming in the rest of this arc.
Yeah, this, I have a feeling we're going to have a string of nines and above, so.
Yeah, like, this is probably my least favorite of the Umbara arc, but that's just saying that it's all set up, because it just goes up from here, and, yeah, I know for a fact there's a 10, and I know which episode it is. Like, I know there's a 10 in the season, so you'll have to keep listening to figure out which episode is my 10. So, yeah, I love this arc. I love everything about it. I love the design. I love the clones. I love the stories. I've been wanting it. I've been waiting for it, and we're here, and I'm so happy. So, 9 out of 10.
You got 3 more weeks to bask in it.
Yeah, listeners, Chris was like, do you want to do 2? And I was like, no, we're doing a book. No, we are here. No, we're savoring it. Like, why? I was very adamant about it. I was like, no, we're not. We can suck it. I got Palpatine. Yeah, I was like, no, don't do it, Honeywell. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback, whether it's on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freak Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because if you rate and review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. So if you like us or you dislike us, just let us know on iTunes. But this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our Season 3 wrap-up. And it's actually kind of a shorty, because we only had one, other than Dario sending us a picture of Kit Kat, so I just went with this one.
This is from Brian Weber, and he says, can we get a Suck It Honeywell on a t-shirt? Actually, yes. We didn't need to go through all this episode and just make tons of shirts because it was filled with golden moments. Hope still has me rolling with her Rex recaps. I told you.
I tell you every year
with the Rex recaps, you're like, I don't know. I always kind of cut it out of the show, guys. But at the end of every Rex recap, she goes, I don't know. I think that kind of sucked. I don't think. Do you think that's like okay?
I think season 3 was still my worst one, but it was totally worth it for me being like, and Dave Filoni goes, I have a hat. That's what makes me laugh. Just, I have a hat, because I'm Dave Filoni.
We also need some Shut the Fuck Up Chris t-shirts would also be acceptable.
Yeah, though I do like the idea of, like, Suck It Honeywell and then just sell them as, like, a thing for, like, a fundraiser for the Two True Freaks or something.
I just noticed both our last names have that satisfying... If you're insulting someone and you have a comma and then their name, our last names are really good for that. Suck it, Honeywell. Suck it, Mullinax.
Suck it, honey.
You know, what are you looking at, Mullinax? It's the three syllables. Makes it very satisfying to insult people.
I'm looking at Rex, you madman, so suck it, Honeywell. Well, I'm already touring into mine. Chris doesn't like American Kit Kats, and he thinks they're gross. So
they suck.
As I'm finding out, because that honeydew melon Kit Kat we had last week, oh my god.
Oh my god, that was good, Dario.
That is probably the best thing, like the best piece of candy I've ever eaten in my life. Oh my god. Like, I still, I told people, like customers about it in my store, and I don't think they cared. But... Because Mr. Suck It Honeywell doesn't like American Kit Kats, our friend Dario, who's a flight attendant, sends us candy to review on our show. And I forgot where this one is from.
It says fine European wafers on it.
Yeah, we are going to be eating a Toggy wafer.
It's made in Greece.
Yeah, so Greece Lightning.
We got some greasy candy here.
Go Greece Lightning. Burr, 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 burr. Wow, this is way longer than I thought it was going to be.
I thought it was going to be four of them, right?
Right.
Nope. Oh. Now, this is very similar to the other waferies, but...
The ones
the peanut butter is strong in this one.
Oh, the peanut butter is strong in this one.
Isn't there... There's something like maybe a slight coffee taste to it. Or it might just be the peanut butter is like high-quality peanut butter or different...
I don't taste a coffee taste, but I've also been drinking coffee during all this. Mm. So I don't taste it, but that is a very strong peanut butter. Because I smelt the peanut butter the moment I opened it.
Yeah, it's not... It's different than the, like... like a Reese's peanut butter cup or regular peanut stuff. It's a very strong peanutty taste. It's good. Maybe the peanuts are really roasty or something.
You know, the wafers are kind of... I don't want to say stale, but they're a little tough. Like, they've been, like...
They're not... Yeah, they don't just, like... But I think everything's a little thicker in this, you know what I mean? Our usual wafer ones are like biting through like peanut butter flavored air.
That's actually what I was just about to say. Like, I feel like there's more wafer in this than a normal wafer.
So, I like it.
Me too. I wish it wasn't into four pieces though, because this is very long.
There's two very long wafery.
And it has melted to my fingers now before I reach the top.
I'm actually, like, holding on to the wrapper because I was afraid that would happen.
Yeah, but it's melted on my fingers. I have chocolate fingers now.
Chocolate fingers.
Well, thank you, Dario. Well, that's all we have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at choochoofreak.com, where I sit on top of a mound of chocolate, eating it, working on my diabetes with Wilfred Brimley. Oh, this is good. And we got a million podcasts there. We got a Amazon link. Once you're indoctrinated and you've been listening to Two True Freaks podcast, you'll be very curious to talk to other people who listen to our podcast and the other podcasters. So you might want to go to our Facebook page, which is called Two True Freaks. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can talk about stuff other than our shows, although I don't know why you would want to do that. And we even have a Twitter feed that will tell you all the episodes that are coming out, and that is Two True Freaks at Twitter, and that's Gene, the podcasting machine. Ba-dum-ba-ba-dum-bum. Gene! And good news, Hope.
What?
I don't know when this show is coming out, but it's probably going to be coming right out about time of the Two True Freaks picnic at Dario's in Queens.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I could go.
Where we will be roasting a 50-pound pig. It will have a face on it. Dario's even bought new equipment to roast the pig with. But as of right now, Gene, the podcasting machine, and his wife and daughter are going to be attending.
Oh!
So I haven't seen Gene. I haven't seen Gene since ACBCCon, which is 2 years ago. So I'm really looking forward to that. I miss seeing Gene. I miss Gene in person. I get some virtual Gene, but this time flesh and blood Gene. His wife is great too. His daughter's great. His wife and daughter are. His wife is a big Star Trek fan. So how can you go wrong with that? You know.
Yeah.
She'd probably get along really well with your mom.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. It's probably already happened, or I'd invite everybody who's near New York City to come. If we put this out and it's before, no, there's no way this is going to be out in time. Haha, too late. it was a riot. Either that or something terrible happened and New York dropped into the sea and you're listening to me from beyond the grave now.
Oh, no, don't say that.
But, yeah, that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
That was very dire.
That goes along with this episode.
I hope no one falls into the ocean.
Yeah, me too.
You know? We were talking about the big eclipse that's coming, and how it's going to be right around the time of the picnic, and I was just, my first thought was like, what if the moon crashes into the earth? I was like, that can't actually happen. At least not yet, anyway. So, actually, is the moon spiraling away or closer to the sun? Or is it, I know it's not in perfect balance. I know eventually we either gain or lose a moon. I forgot which one it is, though.
I think we lose one. I think we lose it eventually, but it's...
Yeah, I think it eventually slings away. Mm-hmm. And then that's bad, because then we don't have tides and stuff. And
well,
that's really
I think in the scale of the sun, I think by the time we lose the moon, I think the Earth is probably pretty inhospitable by that time to human life, so...
That's true, so... Well, it's not our problem. We won't be here.
Exactly.
Have fun, future people. When you listen to this 5,000 years from now. All right. Well, you can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account, and I don't have it pulled up in front of me. Someone followed us recently, and they're really nice because they keep tagging us and stuff, but it's like a Save the Clone Wars account, and I forgot who exactly it was. I'm pulling it up right now. But they always, like, tweet us and things, and, like, these, like, really cool fan-made things for Save the Clone Wars. And, it's at SWG The Clone Wars, and their name is literally Bring Back the Clone Wars. So I just wanted to say thank you, because you guys always tweet stuff at us, and you include us in tweets, and you guys are really nice, and I enjoy seeing all the artwork. They pretty much do it every single day, and they had one earlier of, like, Yoda and the clones and stuff, and they're always tweeting Disney and Star Wars and Dave Filoni. So Bring Back the Clone Wars, you guys are really cool. Thanks for including us in tweets and stuff like that, so I really appreciate it.
One of these days, I gotta go out and find some other Clone Wars podcasts to see what they're like.
That would be really fun.
It would be really interesting, I think.
I think so too. Especially, I'm not sure. I have to wonder how many people was podcasting when the show was running versus how many people are doing stuff like we're doing now. So, hey, listeners, if you guys listen to any other Clone Wars podcasts, tell us what you think about them. Leave us some feedback this episode.
I'd like to listen to a few of them. I'm really curious to see what different approaches get taken on this.
Yeah, so definitely give us, like, a shout-out, because that's something I would love to know about. So
I want to make sure nobody else is doing Dirty Yoda.
Yeah. And you can also find me on whatthefangirl.com. I'm the news writer for What the Fangirl, and where we write cool stuff over there and stuff. So, yeah, that wasn't very good. I'm sorry. I got distracted by Twitter because I was looking at Clone Wars stuff on Twitter.
You're getting distracted from your Clone Wars show by looking at Clone Wars stuff on Twitter. I guess that's acceptable.
Okay, well, we'll accept it. I got the Honeywell seal of approval.
Are you glad I accept that? Yeah. I can tell.
Yep, at Jacobs and Jedi, and at Hope Molinex on Twitter, and with fangirl.com. Yay! Oh my gosh.
So, join us next week when Hope will be much calmer.
No, not really. There are... There are literal human centipedes.
She's already cackling. Oh my god.
There are literal human centipedes, but it's not how you're thinking it right now. Oh. It's not what you think. They're not that way. They're big centipede droids with humans inside them. But it's just more fun to say human. It's much more fun to say human centipedes, because that didn't used to have an implication, and now it does.
Now you weapon. Can't.
Yeah. Maybe it's that's like fan fiction territory, but very terrible, awful fan fiction. Very bad. Very, very bad.
Space human centipede.
Nope. it's really, really bad. I take it everything back. I am ashamed. I'm sorry, because I just thought about Rex and Fives, and then it was really bad from there.
Do you think on Kashyyyk they have a horror movie called The Wookiee Centipede?
Oh, God. It'd be very, very fuzzy.
Yeah.
But not in a good... You know, Mala would have to get that Brazilian bikini Rex we always talk about, because that's the... Do you think that they get shit stuck to their fur?
Who? Oh, yeah, for sure. There's a joke video that's been going around for years on YouTube involving Wookiee, Chewbacca, and Ewok that covers that.
Is it the whole thing where it's like a bear shitting and they pick up a rabbit and wipe their ass?
Yeah, it is. Except it's an Ewok. Yes. Chewbacca wipes his ass with an Ewok in a video.
Yeah.
I can't believe you haven't seen that video. That's been around for like 10 years.
You know, I've seen similar like little comic of it. Like it was like a little comic, and I've seen the similar comic, so I can very much imagine what it looks like in my head.
Yes.
So, well. Come back next week to see the human centipede, guys! Yeah!
Yoda's ready.
The Yoda centipede.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm not even... Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.